pair of shoes. And the cobbler asked the young Reagan, do you want square toes or round toes on your shoes? He was unable to decide. He didn't know which he wanted, so he gave no answer. And the cobbler said, well, I'll give you a few days and then think about it. So several days later, this shoemaker saw Reagan on the street and asked him again what kind of toes he wanted on his shoes. And he still couldn't decide. So the cobbler said, well, come to my shop in a couple of days, and I'll have your shoes ready. When the future president did so, he found one square-toed and one round-toed shoe. And the cobbler said, this will teach you to never let people make decisions for you, the cobbler said. Ronald Reagan said, I learned right then and there, if you don't make your own decisions, someone else will. So he ended up with a pair of shoes, one round toe and one square toe. Something we do every day in life is to make choices. We decide. We make judgments about things that need to be done or that need our attention, and we choose. Whatever age we are, young, old, in between, we make choices. Some choices are easy and very clear-cut. Others are difficult and not black and white at all. I'll give you an example. I just finished reading a book entitled Churchill, Walking with Destiny. Very interesting book. And there's an account there that during World War II, Winston Churchill was forced to make a very painful choice. The British Secret Service had broken a Nazi code and informed Churchill that the Germans were going to bomb the city of Coventry. Churchill had two choices, two alternatives. One, evacuate the citizens of that town and save hundreds of lives at the cost of letting the Germans know that their code was broken, or take no action, which would kill hundreds, but keep the information flowing and possibly save many thousands of lives. And that was the choice he made, to not inform the city and allow hundreds to die in lieu of saving thousands of lives, which is exactly what happened. We don't always face those kinds of choices. We seldom do, if ever in life, face that kind of choice. But in our lives as Christians, and in the decisions we make, the choices we make daily and throughout our lives as Christians, we have tools to help us to make good decisions and the right choices, especially in areas that involve matters of eternal life. God has given us what we need. God's given us the tools. I'd like you to notice a proverb. We're going to spend a lot of time in Proverbs today because it is a source for the tools that we need to help us make good choices. But Proverbs 9, verse 1 makes an interesting statement. Proverbs 9, verse 1 says, wisdom has built her house. She has hewn out her seven pillars. And then it doesn't say any more about those seven pillars. It doesn't tell us what they are. But it refers to seven pillars of wisdom. Although none are specifically listed here, we know the number seven seems to be significant throughout the Bible. And the point here may be that wisdom, godly wisdom, produces or will produce a perfect world, a perfect society, a perfect life. Godly wisdom has that capacity. And maybe that's really the point of it. But if you search the Proverbs, you can find at least seven pillars of wisdom. Call them seven pillars of wisdom. The Sonsino commentary on the statement, wisdom has builded her house, here from verse 1. The Sonsino commentary says, has built her house for the reception of guests, those who have come. And certainly we seek out wisdom. The imagery here may have been suggested as a contrast to the house of immorality described in chapter 7. So chapter 7 is a very big contrast to chapter 9. And then Sansino commenting on these seven pillars are indicative of a mansion built around a courtyard, the structure being supported by three pillars on each side and one in the center on the third side facing the open space, which was the entrance. So you walk in, and there's three pillars on one side, three on the other side, and a major pillar kind of in the middle, far side, supporting that wall. And Sansino comments on the interesting imagery. But it speaks about wisdom has built her house and has carved out or hewn out her seven pillars. Wise people are said to be skillful and practical at living life. They make good choices. Interesting quote I found, it may be true that there are two sides to every question, but it is also true that there are two sides to a sheet of flypaper, and makes a big difference to the fly which side he chooses. And certainly it does. Choices are important. Wise choices are vitally important for old and young, and they're very practical to the principles for making wise choices. I want to give you a definition, a couple of definitions of wisdom. If you just look it up in the dictionary, will say the quality of having experience, knowledge, and good judgment. The soundness of an action or decision with regard to the application of experience, knowledge, and good judgment. Wisdom is also considered to be the body of knowledge and principles that develop within a society or a certain period of time, a body of knowledge and experience and principles. We sometimes speak about the wisdom of the ages. But for our purposes, let me give you this definition, another definition of wisdom. The resources, or the resource we draw on to make good decisions and choices as we try to live a righteous life. As we try to live a godly life, the resources we draw upon to make good decisions and good choices as we try to live a righteous life. So, although there is no listing in Proverbs 9:1 of these seven pillars, we're not told what specifically that verse refers to, we can search Proverbs and find at least seven pillars of wisdom as we go through the book of Proverbs. So let's begin with number one, Proverbs 9, verse 10. The first pillar of wisdom, if you recall how the pillars were set in an ordinary courtyard in a house, three on one side, three on the other side, one in the middle, we could consider this one the center pillar, a foundational pillar. Proverbs 9, verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. How does the Bible define fear of the Lord? It's a good definition in Proverbs 8, verse 13. Proverbs 8, verse 13. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride, and arrogance, and the evil way, and the perverse mouth. I hate, God hates. Pride, arrogance, and the evil way, and the perverse mouth. The fear of the Lord is to hate evil. Again, the Sansino commentary has an interesting comment on this verse. They say, here is the fundamental purpose of religion. Whereas in practice men combine a worship of God with the performance of unethical deeds, wisdom insists that serving God is impossible without rejecting and abhorring all that is evil. Wisdom is impossible without rejecting evil and abhorring everything that is evil. So this pillar of wisdom, the fear of the Lord, means we love God, we adhere to His way of living, we want to learn more about this way of life, and we humble ourselves before God. Humility is an important part of growing in the fear of God. It's a vital part of fearing God. In Job 28, notice how Job described wisdom in Job 28. And think about the context of what Job is saying. What's the whole context of this? What's going on in Job's life at this time? What's happening to him? What might he be wondering about? Job 28, beginning here in verse 12. But where can wisdom be found? And what is the place of understanding? Man does not know its value, nor is it found in the land of the living. The deep says, it's not in me, and the sea says, it is not with me. It cannot be purchased for gold, nor can silver be weighed for its price. Can you just go out and buy wisdom with gold, with a ton of money? It cannot be valued in the gold of Ophir, in precious onyx or sapphire. Neither gold nor crystal can equal it, nor can wisdom be exchanged for jewelry or fine gold. No mention shall be made of coral or quartz, for the price of wisdom is above rubies. The topaz of Ethiopia cannot equal it, nor can it be valued in pure gold. From where then does wisdom come? Job asks. And where is the place of understanding? It is hidden from the eyes of all living. It's an interesting statement. Wisdom is hidden from purely physical eyes alone, and concealed from the birds of the air. Destruction and death say, we've heard a report about it with our ears. God understands its way, and he knows its place. For he looks to the ends of the earth and sees under the whole heavens, to establish a weight for the wind and apportion the waters by measure. When he made a law for the rain and a path for the thunderbolt, then he saw wisdom and declared it. He prepared it. Indeed, he searched it out. And to man he said, behold, the fear of the Lord, that is wisdom. And to depart from evil is understanding. True wisdom is something that comes from God. The kind of wisdom that we're searching for, that is, to make decisions and choices that help us live the Christian life. That kind of wisdom comes from God. And it comes from having the fear of God. What was the context of this? What was going on in Job's life? Job was frustrated. He was unable to find a wise solution to the mystery behind his suffering. And his counselors tried to give him advice, but they were really a hindrance. So this theme, where can you find wisdom, was important to Job. And it's certainly important to us as well. Job 28, this chapter is written as a poem in Hebrew, in Hebrew language, and it naturally divides into three sections. The first 11 verses, which we didn't read, you can go back and read those, talk about how man is inquisitive by nature, wants to know things, and develops technology and certain physical skills that enables him to find the riches of the earth, gold and jewels, and man finds those things no matter how difficult they are to get to. Man finds those things. Then verses 12 through 19 talk about the value of wisdom and how scarce it is compared to those treasures. And then verse 20 through 28 answers the question, where can you find wisdom? It has a source, but it's so elusive that only God knows the way to it, the kind of wisdom that we seek, the kind of wisdom that we need in God's church. It's part of his way of life. Those Proverbs 11, verse 2. We'll go back to Proverbs. Again, we'll spend a lot of time in Proverbs. And if a young person growing up in the church, any of our young men here, would like to be growing in wisdom as you grow up, read Proverbs. Study Proverbs all the time. Study a lot in Proverbs. Just read a proverb a day and you've read the whole book in a month. A chapter a day and you've read the whole book in a month. Read Proverbs. Look into Proverbs. Proverbs 11, verse 2. When pride comes, then comes shame, but with the humble is wisdom. The Amplified Bible reads this way, when swelling and pride come, then emptiness and shame come also, but with the humble, those who are lowly, who have pruned or chiseled, been pruned or chiseled by trial, and who renounce self, is skillful in godly wisdom and soundness. Those things come with along with humility. A healthy and balanced fear of God leads to humility. And it makes us humble before God. And in our human relationships. Proverbs 15, verse 33. Again, the fear of the Lord is the instruction of wisdom. And before honor is humility. Some want to go directly to honor. They get into a position of leadership or want a position of leadership or covet a position of leadership in whatever area they may function in, you know, at work or church or, you know, some organization. But there's a reminder, before honor is humility. So the first and central pillar of wisdom is this, the fear of the Lord, the fear of God, to gain wisdom. Young people, old people, all of us, to gain wisdom, study, and grow in the fear of the Lord and what that means. A second pillar of wisdom is knowledge and understanding. But not just any knowledge. Knowledge is exploding at such a rate, more than 2,000 pages of information a minute. 2,000 pages of a minute of information, new information, that even someone with the brain of Einstein couldn't keep up. If you read 24 hours a day, from age 21 to age 70, and retained everything you read, which would be amazing, you would be only 1.5 million years behind when you finished, as far as the new information coming out. So much new information is coming out. On average, human knowledge is doubling every 13 months. It's amazing. Human knowledge doubling every 13 months at this time. But it is important to have a burning desire to learn God's knowledge, to learn God's word and God's laws, to have more and more knowledge about those things and understanding of God's ways. Let's look at Proverbs again. Proverbs 18 and verse 15. It's interesting that God understands how the human brain works. Some of you have do better learning things by watching and seeing. Some of you learn better by hearing. Some learn better by writing and reading. Some learn better by hands-on doing. But all of those things help reinforce knowledge. And it's interesting how Proverbs 18:15 talks about two types of students here in verse 15. The heart of the prudent acquires knowledge, and the ear of the wise seeks knowledge. Here, one acquires knowledge by diligent study. He has a heart for it. Diligent study and reading. The other acquires knowledge by hearing. He has an ear for it. And we gain knowledge both in our own personal study and by listening. Combining those two things together, our personal study and hearing from teachers, helps us to grow in knowledge. Notice where Proverbs says godly knowledge and understanding comes from. Proverbs 2, verse 6. Proverbs 2, verse 6. We're told, "For the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth comes knowledge and understanding." From God's mouth comes knowledge and understanding. That is the knowledge and understanding we seek that's most important. We seek knowledge in our field of study or our technical skill that applies to our work. And all of that is good knowledge. We need that knowledge. But the most important knowledge we seek is knowledge of God's way of life and how to live that way of life wisely. That comes from the mouth of God. From his mouth comes knowledge and understanding. The more we are in obedience to and conform with God's precepts, the more of the right kind of knowledge and right kind of understanding we'll have. And it's just a law. A couple of definitions. Definition of knowledge: facts or information. Knowledge, facts, information. The definition of understanding is comprehension or insight. It includes comprehension or insight or good judgment. And when you combine those two together, knowledge of God's way of life and comprehension and good judgment in applying it, then we're better able to understand ourselves, better able to understand others, our neighbor, our brother, our sister in the church, a friend, and we're better able to show love to others and compassion for others. When we combine knowledge and understanding as God intends it, it's an important skill. But notice how foolishness is described. How would you define foolishness? We're told in some places foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. Of course, that's talking about a particular kind of foolishness, but let's go to Proverbs 18 and verse 2. The opposite, then, of godly knowledge and understanding or wisdom, Proverbs 18, verse 2, a fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. Not a very teachable spirit. He doesn't gain godly understanding because he doesn't learn more and more about relying on God and God's way. He would rather air his own opinions that are based only on his own way of thinking, even though it may be foolish. And the views he holds in his eyes are unquestionably right. And, you know, we use the term a know-it-all, somebody who comes across as knowing everything, one who is very self-centered. And here Proverbs defines that as foolishness. Go with me back to Proverbs 3. And again, Proverbs is just so rich with instruction on these pillars of wisdom. Proverbs 3, and beginning in verse 5, notice the advice here about knowledge and understanding versus trusting in our own self only. We're told, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. It will be health to your flesh and strength to your bones. There's physical health that also comes from a certain peace of mind, from an understanding of life and the world and what's going on around us. Health physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually that comes from living this way of life. Man's understanding is fallible. And so we're told, trust in God. Lean not only on your own understanding. Let's go back to Psalm 119 for a moment. Psalm 119 and verse 130. Psalm 119, verse 130, in the English Standard Version, reads this way. The unfolding of your words gives light. It imparts understanding to the simple. Talking about God's words. It gives light, imparts understanding to the simple. That word unfolding or opening, the entrance of your words, the New King James says, the unfolding or opening of your words gives understanding and gives light. It educates us. And God's words educate the young and the simple. As we heard in the earlier, a young person, a very young person, can be familiar with God's ways and God's laws. Our young people in the church could explain the whole plan of God if you've taught them the holy days and the meaning of the holy days. They just go through the holy days, can explain the whole plan of God. God's words educate us and teach us. From God's words, we gain knowledge and understanding about life and the ability to know what the purpose for life and the meaning of life is all about. So the second pillar of wisdom, knowledge and understanding. To gain wisdom, study, and grow in the knowledge and understanding of God's word. Number three. A third pillar of wisdom, Proverbs 11 and verse 4. And again, these are for the young and the old because, you know, there's never a time in life that we can't profit from these things, however long we've been in God's church, whatever our age might be. Proverbs 11, verse 14. Where there is no counsel, the people fall, but in the multitude of counselors there is safety. Number three, seek good counsel and advice. A third pillar of wisdom. Parallel saying we have in the English language, two heads are better than one. You know, know, it's good to get advice. It's interesting that Christ sent his disciples out by twos, you know, for several reasons, but also that they could advise each other. Queen Elizabeth II is credited with this quote. She said, "To what greater inspiration and counsel can we turn than to the imperishable truth to be found in the treasure house, the Bible? The Bible is a wise counselor." The Bible is a wise counselor. And again, we're told to seek counsel. In a multitude of counselors, there is safety. Turn to Proverbs 15, verse 22. Proverbs 15, verse 22. "Without counsel, plans go awry, but in the multitude of counselors, they are established." The Good News Translation reads, "Get all the advice you can, and you will succeed. Without it, you will fail." The Bible in Basic English, "Where there are no wise suggestions, purposes come to nothing. But by a number of wise guides, they are made certain." There are times and places to seek advice and to seek good counsel. Sometimes it's spiritual, sometimes it's physical, but there are times in our life when we ought to seek wise counsel. Let me share with you a couple of quotes about advice. "We could all save ourselves a lot of words if we'd only remember that people rarely take advice unless they have to pay for it." And so often that's where human nature is. "The trouble with good advice is that it utterly interferes with your plans." And that's so often true. "Good advice is what your own kids disregard but save to give to their kids." And we find that as our children have gotten older, the things we taught them that they disregarded as children, now they're teaching their children. Why didn't they buy into it when, you know, they were younger? Why would a person not seek counsel when he needs it, when he should? It could be fear that it may require something of him that he doesn't like, or maybe sometimes people just don't want to look weak. They think that seeking advice or looking for counsel is a sign of weakness. Or maybe he's just wise in his own eyes, and conceit and pride may be at the root of it. One of the functions of us in the ministry, of pastors and ministers and elders, is to be available for counseling. We're not experts in all subjects, but we're supposed to be familiar with the Bible principles enough to be able to give sound advice in certain situations. So, you know, please don't hesitate to call if you need advice or help or counsel, or ask for a visit if that would be helpful from an elder or minister or pastor. It would be, you know, it may be helpful to you, and that's one of the reasons we're here, one of the things that we can do. Proverbs 24 and verse 6. "We can accomplish a lot on our own, but there are times when all of us need counsel and advice." Proverbs 24 and verse 6. "For by wise counsel you will wage your own war, and in a multitude of counselors there is safety." There it is again, this matter of a multitude of counselors. I'd like to tell you a story about a man who sought some counsel. You know him perhaps as, well, let's see, if I were to make up a name, I'd call him the Popcorn Man. You may know who I'm talking about if I say the Popcorn Man. What name comes to mind associated with popcorn more than Orville Redenbacher? You've probably all sampled Orville Redenbacher's product, but do you know much about his story or his background? Let me share a little bit of that with you, quoting from an account that he wrote. "The man behind the desk listened to my sales pitch with that look people get when they think you're trying to sell them stock in a phony gold mine. Pushing my sample jar of Redbow popcorn back at me, he smiled politely. "I don't care how good you say this is, Orville, popcorn is popcorn. People aren't going to pay more for yours." "But," I started to explain, then shook my head, picked up my sample, and trudged out of the regional food processor's office. I knew it was useless to talk any further. He was the umpteenth prospect to turn down the new improved popcorn that had taken me years to develop. No one seemed to want it. I got into my car and gloomily drove through the Indiana countryside toward my office in Valparaiso. Was I at the age of 63 pursuing a foolish dream? As a farm boy in Indiana, peddling popcorn was my main interest. I grew an acre of it as a 4-H project in which I tried year after year to come up with a better variety. As a kid, I wasn't a bad salesman. Selling my popcorn in Terre Haute, where grocery stores would display it in bushel baskets on their wooden floors. But why couldn't I sell it now in 1970 after all these years of perfecting it? I had teamed up with a friend named Charlie Bowman to found Chester Hybrids. We sought to develop a superior popcorn. Our secret was to dry the corn carefully and slowly to maintain an exact moisture level, 13.25% in each kernel, making for nearly 100% poppability. And if you've had Orville Redenbacher, you know, just virtually everything pops. There's no, you know, whatever you call those widows, or I'm not sure if that's the right word, or those things that just don't pop. This helped eliminate the tooth-crunching, unpopped grains I call shy ones. But that night in 1970, I didn't even feel like popping my usual treat. 10 years down the drain, maybe I had better stick to seed and fertilizer, I thought. Although I'd been successful in developing my new popping corn, now I evidently had no talent for selling it. That evening, something from my Sunday school teaching tickled my memory. Something about seeking advisors. I picked up our Bible and rifled through its pages. Yes, there it was, Proverbs 24:6. For by wise guidance you can wage your war, and in abundance of counselors there is victory, from the Revised Standard. Charlie, my partner, and I were farmers. We ran a good local business, but what do we know about the ins and outs of big-time marketing? I decided it was time to get my ego out of my way and admit someone else might be able to help. I began to ask around for the name of a good marketing company. A few days later, I traveled to Chicago to seek guidance from my chosen counselors, the advertising and marketing firm of Gerson, Howe, and Johnson. Then in the Wrigley Building, I found myself at a table with two young copywriters, a retailing expert, and Mr. Gerson, the president. Talk to us about popcorn, he said. So I talked for about 3 hours. Just went on about popcorn, feeling foolish while they just listened. Come back next week, they said, and we'll have something for you. The following week, I returned volunteer, wondering what great marketing scheme they had come up with. We think you should call it Orville Redenbacher's Gourmet Popping Corn. I stared at them dumbfounded. No, I gasped. Redenbacher is such a funny name. I remember those kids giggling back in Indiana at my name. That's the point. People will love it. I drove back to Valparaiso, wryly thinking we had paid $13,000 for someone to come up with the same name my mother had come up with when I was born. Our marketing counselors also recommended we put my picture on the label, which I thought was another mistake. That proverb had better be right, I thought, beginning to question the wisdom of counselors. If people had balked at the price before, what would they say about a funny name and a funny face on a label? There was one way to find out. I would package some as the counselors had recommended and then test market it. On my own, I decided to approach the biggest retailer in the area, Marshall Fields in Chicago. I found out the name of the manager of the 7th floor gourmet food department, sent a case of my newly labeled product to his home, but I did not enclose a note or return address. A month later, I phoned him. Did you like it, I asked. Like it, he answered. We want to stock it. Marshall Fields took the idea and ran with it. Eyewitness News came over and ran coverage on their evening programs. That started the ball rolling with more news elsewhere. When folks discovered it truly was an improved popcorn, we could hardly keep up with the orders. Well, I'm grateful for the wise guidance of an abundance of counselors, as the Bible puts it, though I am still befuddled. What do I, at age 82, know about selling popcorn on television? I'm just a funny-looking farmer with a funny-sounding name, but I still think my popping corn is the best. And he found that there was wisdom in seeking the advice of wise counselors. Look at Proverbs 20 and verse 18. The next time you have Orville Redenbacher's popcorn, think about his story. Proverbs 20, verse 18. Plans are established by counsel, by wise counsel wage war. The Common English Bible, plans are firmed up by advice. Wage wars with good guidance. The Good News Translation, get good advice and you will succeed. Don't go charging into battle without a plan. Good idea for young and old. A young person taking a test at school, you know, an individual going into business, whatever it is. Advice can help. So the third pillar of wisdom is seeking good counsel and advice. To gain wisdom, don't hesitate to seek wise counsel when that's what's needed. A fourth pillar, foresight. Foresight. Pearl Buck, American writer, you're familiar with the name Pearl Buck, once said, if you want to understand today, you have to search yesterday. Interesting statement. Foresight, a fourth pillar. What is foresight? Foresight is defined as the ability to predict or the action of predicting what will happen or what will be needed in the future. Can we really predict the future? Can we really anticipate what may happen if we take this step or that step in the decision we're about to make? Can we really understand or predict the future? Proverbs 27 and verse 12. Proverbs 27 and verse 12 has this principle. Proverbs 27 verse 12. A prudent or wise man foresees evil and hides himself. The simple pass on and are punished. The Complete Jewish Bible says the clever see trouble coming and hide. The thoughtless go on and pay the penalty. There's a lot there. That is, a wise person, first of all, understands what evil is and what it isn't. A wise person thinks about his actions before taking the action, especially when there's a questionable situation or, you know, two or three different ways may be chosen. He thinks about it. He understands what evil is, what the Bible defines evil and good. The Bible in basic English reads this way, the sharp man sees the evil and takes cover. The simple goes straight on and get into trouble. He can foresee. Good News Translation, sensible people will see trouble coming and avoid it. But an unthinking person will walk right into it and regret it later. Either because he hasn't learned from his mistakes in the past, or doesn't think about his mistakes, or doesn't think about something he's been taught from the Bible or from, you know, God's word, or advice or counsel that, you know, good advice that he's been given. I'll tell you a true story about a young man who lacked foresight, paid the ultimate penalty for it. He became, in the spring of 1981, he went up into the Alaskan wilderness, a couple of hundred miles north of Fairbanks. And he was flown into this north country to photograph the beauty and mysteries of the tundra, the way he put it. He had photo equipment, 500 rolls of film, several guns, 1,400 pounds of food and provisions. As the months passed, the entries in his diary, which at first detailed the wonder and beauty and fascination of the wildlife around him, turned into a sad record of a nightmare. In August, he wrote, I think I should have used more foresight about arranging my departure. I'll soon find out. He waited and waited, but no one came to his rescue. In November, he died in a nameless valley by a nameless lake, 225 miles northeast of Fairbanks. An investigation revealed that he had carefully mapped out his venture, but had made no provision to be flown out of the area. Forgot one major element. How am I going to get out of here? How am I going to get home? You know, he certainly lacked foresight as far as thinking down the road. This step leads to this step leads to this step, and he paid the penalty for it. He didn't exercise foresight, didn't consider the latter end of his actions. And that's really what foresight is all about, considering the latter end. There's a statement in Deuteronomy, in the 32nd chapter of Deuteronomy. The Israelites made a similar mistake. They didn't consider their latter end. Deuteronomy 32 is an account of God's blessings on Israel, but how Israel turned away from God and into idolatry. Deuteronomy 32, and notice what God said about this. You can read the entire chapter. It again, gives an account of how they turned away from God. And it in verses 28 and 29, God says this, "For they are a nation void of counsel, nor is there any understanding in them. Oh, that they were wise, that they understood this, that they would consider their latter end." They would consider their latter end. God's Word is an excellent source for giving us the tools to help us grow in foresight, to think about the latter end. God describes in many cases what the latter end of this action will be, or the latter end of that decision will be, and to give us insight into the latter end. Think about all the things the Bible tells us. It gives us a certain amount of foresight just from what we commonly know. We know what's going to happen in the future to the nations of this world. We know the direction that the world is headed. We know how God's kingdom is going to come, and we know how to prepare for that. We have foresight. We understand the future consequences of wrong thinking and wrong actions. The Bible describes much of that. We understand the positive fruits of right thinking and right actions, and the latter end of that. God has given us that foresight. And God's Holy Spirit dwelling in us gives us a certain amount of insight and inspiration to move us in a certain direction. When we go to God in prayer, in fasting, or in seeking counseling, and we need to know which direction to go, you know, God's Spirit also is involved in helping us understand that as well. God does His part to help us grow in foresight and to consider our latter end. So the fourth pillar of wisdom of these seven is exercising foresight. To gain wisdom, ask God for the gift of foresight. Seek it and consider the latter end of a matter. Number five, and this may be the hardest. This may be the most challenging pillar of wisdom, the most difficult to grow in, the most difficult to employ, at least from my experience in life, and that is accepting correction. Accepting and seeking correction can be hard to do and not very pleasant and something to pray about. Hebrews 12, verse 11, we'll come back to Proverbs, but Hebrews 12, verse 11 gives us this reminder about correction. Hebrews 12, verse 11, "Now no chastening or correction seems to be joyful for the present." That's a mouthful. It just doesn't. "But painful. Nevertheless, afterward, if our attitude is right, if we're willing and teachable, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it." Correction trains us, even though it may be an unpleasant experience to go through. I'll tell you another story about one of our presidents. Calvin Coolidge was known as a man of few words, had little to say, and often came up with one-word responses in various situations. He especially didn't like to attend dinners because of the people on left and right to carry on a conversation with, and he just didn't enjoy that. But he agreed to attend a function at which he was to be honored and presented with a ceremonial cane. The man making the presentation went on and on in a way that Coolidge never would have, and just talked and talked in making his comments, and then finished up by saying, "The mahogany from which this cane is fashioned is as solid as the rock-bound coast of Maine, as beautiful as the sun-kissed shores of California." Coolidge came up and accepted the cane, posed for a picture, then stood there for a few moments staring at the cane while everybody waited for what he had to say and for his words of wisdom. And he said only one word. As he looked at the cane, he said, "Birch." It wasn't a mahogany cane. It was a birch cane. And that's all he said. And, you know, I thought about that. There was some gentle correction of the man who had presented what he said was a mahogany cane, But I imagine the man made sure he had his facts correct in any future presentation he would have made. All Coolidge said was birch, and that was it. But correction is hard. It's not an easy thing for us to seek or to accept. The book of Proverbs is filled with advice about the importance of correction, seeking it and taking it to heart. Proverbs 3. And verses 11 and 12. First, correction from God. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor detest his correction. God loves us, so he corrects us. And God always corrects us in love. That correction may come through human instruments or circumstances, but God corrects us because he loves us and to teach us. Proverbs 12, verse 1. Whoever loves instruction loves knowledge, but he who hates correction is stupid, the New King James says. He who hates correction is stupid. The Sansino commentary on this word stupid says brutish. A person in whom animal instincts overrule the spiritual elements. That is, carnal versus spiritual. It's an interesting word that the King James would just use the word stupid. Everybody understands what that means. Proverbs 15 and verses 31 and 32. Proverbs 15:31, the ear that hears the rebukes of life will abide among the wise. He who disdains instruction despises his own soul, but he who heeds rebuke gets understanding. Verse 12, a scoffer does not love one who corrects him, nor will he go to the wise. Accepting correction is hard. But accepting correction and humility go hand in hand. I think you're familiar with the statements in Jeremiah 10, verse 23 and 24, Jeremiah's prayer. Very heartfelt statement in Jeremiah 10, in verses 23 and 24. That's what Jeremiah said about correction and learning and wanting God to teach him and show him a better way. O Lord, I know the way of man is not in himself. It is not in man who walks to direct his own steps. O Lord, correct me, but with justice, not in your anger, lest you bring me to nothing. Correct me, he said. I think Jeremiah's prayer is a prayer that we can all echo at times in life. Here's some good questions to ask ourselves in this matter of correction. Do I welcome honest input and evaluation from others? Do I welcome it? Honest input and evaluation from others? Or do we react to it? Am I able to admit it when I'm wrong? Am I able to admit when I'm wrong? When correction comes, is my first reaction to defend myself, to get defensive? We all know our patterns in life, our tendencies, what our personalities are like, what our attitudes are like, and you know, these are things we can examine ourselves in. So the fifth pillar of wisdom is accepting correction. To gain wisdom, seek correction and take it to heart. Number six, the sixth pillar. Self-discipline or self-control is a pillar of wisdom. Self-discipline or self-control. We'll come back to Proverbs, but let's go first to 2 Timothy 1, verse 7. A phrase we're very familiar with, but an interesting correct translation speaks to this matter of self-discipline or self-control. 2 Timothy 1, verse 7. God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. That word for sound mind is a Greek word used only here. And it should be translated self-discipline or self-control. It's reminding us that God's spirit is a spirit of self-control and self-discipline. God's Spirit will lead us in the direction of better self-control and will lead us in the direction of better self-discipline with temper, with appetites, with whatever, you know, we're struggling with. God's Spirit, as we employ and stir up God's Spirit, will lead us in the direction of self-discipline and self-control. I'll give you an example of the exact opposite. This happened in the spring of 1894. Baseball season just around the corner. The Brewers pitchers and catchers reported to camp just the other day. But in 1894, the Baltimore Orioles came to play Boston to play a just very routine baseball game. The Orioles player at that time, John McGraw, got into a fight with a Boston third baseman. Within minutes, all the players from both teams had joined in the fight. That warfare spread to the grandstands. Among the fans, the conflict went from bad to worse. Someone then set fire to the stands, and the entire ballpark burned to the ground. Not only that, the fire spread to 107 other Boston buildings as well. Two guys get into a fight on the baseball field, and 107 buildings, including the stadium, end up burned to the ground. It just totally got out of control. You know, now that's an extreme example of anger out of control. But uncontrollable anger in our personal life can spread. And it can have very damaging effects. And damage a family, damage us personally, and have long-range ramifications for life. We may say or do something that we deeply regret if anger gets out of control. Proverbs 19. Let's go to Proverbs again. Proverbs 19 and verse 11. God's Spirit leads us to discipline and self-control. Proverbs 19 verse 11. The discretion of a man makes him slow to anger, and his glory is to overlook a transgression. Not just to say the first thing that comes into his mind or do the first thing that he thinks he ought to do in reaction to something that makes him mad, but he thinks. He stops. Thinks about it. First, it's an important proverb. Some quotes on self-control. An anonymous quote says, if you learn self-control, you can master anything. John Wooden, coach of UCLA at one time, said, if you lose self-control, everything will fall. Another anonymous quote, control yourself or someone else will control you. A lot of people are in prison because they couldn't control themselves, and now somebody else controlling their lives. Robert E. Lee said, I cannot trust a man to control others if he cannot control himself. Cannot trust a person to control others if he can't control himself. And Calvin Coolidge, one of his lengthier statements, industry, thrift, and self-control are not sought because they create wealth, but because they create character. Industry, thrift, and self-control help create character. So the sixth pillar of wisdom, something that God's Spirit leads us to, is self-control or self-discipline. To gain wisdom, learn to exercise self-control. And the last one, number seven, the seventh pillar, a good relationship with people. This is in the Proverbs, or call it good people skills. Because Proverbs has a lot to say about getting along with people. And it's an area we can grow in and improve in as we study out the principles in Proverbs and learn how to use them. Proverbs 11 and verse 30. Proverbs 11 and verse 30. Now, this one takes a little bit of looking into, but the King James, New King James says, the fruit of the righteous is a tree of life, and he who wins souls is wise. Someone who wins people is called wise. Commentary, Sonsino commentary on the fruit of the righteous says this, the effect produced on others by the righteous principles of his life, by how a person lives, by how he conducts his life and treats others, that fruit is evident to others and it has an impact on other people. that word wins souls, the Sansino says, attracts persons to himself by his example, by his own life. The New Living Translation says the seeds of good deeds become a tree of life. A wise person wins friends. So again, it's worth studying these pillars of wisdom and helping us to get along with people. Let's go to Daniel 12:3. Daniel 12:3 before we come back to Proverbs. Daniel 12:3. Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament. And those who turn many to righteousness shall shine like the stars forever and ever. Those who turn many to righteousness. Again, that's something that we do in this life, again, by our example, by being a part of the work of God. But in the future, we'll have a direct hand in helping to turn people and teach people and turn them to righteousness. A friend of mine, a long-time acquaintance, a businessman, worked most of his life in his particular trade. He retired just recently, 80-some years old. He said, "You can't sell to anybody unless you love everybody," was the way he put it. He said, "You can't sell to anybody unless you love everybody," was the way he used to put it, just learning to get along with people. He considered himself to be in the people business, not the product that he sold. That was just something as an aside. Proverbs 18, verse 24. Proverbs 18, verse 24. There is this statement. "A man who has friends must himself be friendly. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother." A man who has friends must show himself friendly. A small boy once defined a friend as someone who knows all about you and likes you just the same. Knows all about you but likes you anyway. So again, there are many principles, but this seventh pillar of wisdom is a good relationship with people or good people skills. To gain wisdom, study the Proverbs about getting along with people, and then practice the principles. Here are seven pillars of wisdom: fear of the Lord, knowledge and understanding, seeking good counsel and advice, foresight, accepting correction, self-discipline or self-control, and a good relationship with people or good people skills. We have a couple of excellent articles on Life, Hope, and Truth. Just type in the search box, wisdom, and you'll find several very good articles on the subject of wisdom. Wisdom is important for all of us, men, women, young and old. I want to conclude here in Ecclesiastes 7. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 12. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 12. "For wisdom," it says, "is a defense as money is a defense. But the excellence of knowledge is that wisdom gives life to those who have it." What a mouthful. Wisdom gives life to those who have it. It makes life more enjoyable, more complete and fulfilling, and ultimately gives eternal life to those who have it. It's vital that we grow in making wise choices as we go through life. The words of Eleanor Roosevelt, I think, ring true. She said, "One's philosophy is not best expressed in words. It's expressed in the choices we make. In the long run, we shape our lives and we shape ourselves. The process never ends until we die. And the choices we make are ultimately our responsibility." Study and grow, continue to grow in making wise choices. Wisdom is just so practical for everyday living. It's a vital element in helping life be as it should be, as God intended it to be, the abundant life. But realize wisdom is not an end in itself. It's a means to an end. The means to a goal, the goal of becoming a member of the Spirit-born family of God. That's where godly wisdom ultimately leads us. So understand and employ the seven pillars of wisdom.